Do you believe things about Jesus? Or are you following Jesus? Funny thing is, you can actually believe things about Jesus and not participate at all with the Spirit's work in the world, changing the world. As Richard Rohr so beautifully says, you can believe all the right things and still be a jerk. Following Jesus, though, changes everything. There was a father, irate father, incensed father, called the chaplain at Duke University and was irate, incensed. Now, his daughter, what he was complaining about was his daughter, who was the top of her class at Duke, had been already accepted to the best medical school in the country, had decided to set it aside to spend two years doing mission work in Haiti, digging wells with the Presbyterian Church. And the father said, "It's your fault," to the chaplain. "I blame you that she's wasting this opportunity." And the chaplain was like, "Well, me, what did I do? You're the one that had her baptized. I mean, you're the one that had her baptized where it was proclaimed that she is a beloved child of God. You're the one who read her Bible stories. You're the one who brought her to Sunday school. You're the one that got her confirmed. You're the one that let her go on those youth mission trips. It's not my fault that she's beginning to understand what it means to be a beloved child of God. It's not my fault that she's chosen to follow the one who reveals the heart of God, that she's chosen to follow the one who said, if you want to find your life, give your life away. And the chaplain said, you're the one that introduced her to Jesus, not me. And there was silence on the other phone, on the end of the phone. And finally, this father said, but all I ever wanted her to be was a Presbyterian. Ouch. This young woman's faith, as she began to follow Jesus, she realized it reoriented everything, it transformed everything, it turned everything upside down, that her faith was no longer about believing the right things about Jesus, but it became about a way of being in the world that reflected the heart of Jesus. You know, we're celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. By the way, the door is up there. As we remember Martin Luther, who nailed his 95 grievances to the door, your invitation at any stage, any Sunday, or during the week is to write your grievances, write your challenges, write your questions, write your ideas, right on the door as we kind of celebrate this new Reformation that we're part of. Well, one of the possibilities that might suggest that we're in the midst of a new Reformation is Brian McLaren uses the language migration, this shift from such an emphasis about getting our beliefs right to really wrestling with what does it mean to follow in the way of Jesus in the world. So how will we be known 5 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now? You know, we'll hopefully not be known by our beliefs. Hopefully we'll not be known by how much we argue about our beliefs and the way we exclude others who don't believe like us. What if we become known as those who follow Jesus in such a way that we reveal the radical, uncompromising, boundless love and compassion of Jesus in the world? What's that song? No, just that was a test. They'll know we are Christians by our love. So I want us to imagine, I, reimagine Jesus. And I want us today to reimagine Jesus by maybe imagining we're in a boat and we meet Jesus for the first time on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. You with me? So Jesus was a Jewish rabbi. I hate to break it to some of you, he wasn't a Christian. He was a Jewish rabbi with Jewish disciples living in a very Jewish world. And he lived in a region called Galilee. And the Jewish people of Galilee believed that God had given to Moses, this great historical leader, the first five books of the Bible. The first five books of the Bible are called the Torah. Now, the Torah simply means teaching, instruction. It means the way. And Torah was foundational to their lives. The Torah was central to their lives. The Torah was the focus of their educational system. So Jewish boys and girls from the age of 6 years old would go to school to learn the Torah. And most of these schools were in synagogues, local synagogues. They were taught by a Torah teacher who was the local rabbi. So all of them were there. And the first level of education was called Beit Sefer. And what Beit Sefer meant is they would actually memorize the first five books of the Bible, the Torah. They would know it by heart. So by the age of 10 years old, they would have known Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy by heart, memorized. Imagine. So by the age of 10 years old, by the time Beit Sefer is over, most of the kids no longer go to school. Most of them have already started as apprentices with their parents, learning the family trade, learning the family business. But those who were the best of the best, those who were a cut above the rest, they went on to the next level. The next level was called Beit Talmud. Now, Beit Talmud was for the gifted kids, the kids who had this natural ability. Because in Beit Talmud, by the time they were 14, 15 years old, they would have memorized the entire Hebrew scriptures, Genesis to Malachi. Imagine that. So again, most kids by this stage had gone on. They're not in school any longer. They're learning the family business. They're learning the family trade. But those who are the best of the best went on to the next educational level. And that was called Beit Midrash. And at Beit Midrash, what the students would do is they would apply to become disciples of their rabbi. Now, when we hear the word disciple, we generally think student. You know, you would come to know what the teacher knows. Here in the first century world, disciple means something far deeper. A disciple would not only want to know what the rabbi knows, but the disciple would want to do what the rabbi does so that the disciple could be like the rabbi. Now, rabbis in this particular day and age had various different interpretations of the Torah. Not like today, where everybody thinks the same. And I've only gotten two letters this week about what a heretic I am. So in that day, they had different interpretations of the Torah. So one rabbi might say, you know, if you take this verse or this command of God, it means this. This is how you follow God. And another rabbi would say, well, actually, no, I look at this quite differently. Another rabbi would say, no, actually, I look at that even differently than you. So different rabbis had different interpretations of the way they interpreted, understood, and lived out Scripture. Now, the set of interpretations of a rabbi, this is where it gets exciting, was called that rabbi's yoke. Yoke. Heard that word a little later on? So what would happen is that a student would apply to become the rabbi's disciple, and if the student applied to become the rabbi's disciple, what the student was wanting to do was take on that rabbi's yoke upon them. And if they took the yoke upon them, what they were seeking to do is not only know what the rabbi knows, but do what the rabbi does, so that they can be like the rabbi. So what happens is the student applies to the rabbi to become a disciple. And the student applies to become a disciple. And so the rabbi will ask all of these questions about the Torah, the prophets, the oral tradition. And the whole time the rabbi's evaluating. Does this one have what it takes? Is this one a cut above the rest? Can this one take my yoke, my teaching, and spread it? And so the rabbi would ask all of these questions, and after asking these questions, the rabbi would go to the student and say, you clearly love God, you clearly love the Torah, but you don't have what it takes. You don't have what it takes to be one of my disciples. Go and learn the family business. But then the rabbi will go to one and say, you have what it takes. You have what it takes to be my disciple. And then the rabbi will say, come, follow me. So they're 14, 15, 16 years old, and they go. They leave their family, they leave their friends, they leave the synagogue, they leave the village, and they go and devote their entire lives to learning what the rabbi knows, to doing what the rabbi does, to be like the rabbi. So you would have a rabbi come into town, a powerful rabbi. And what you would have is this rabbi would have a pack of disciples right behind. Because all of these disciples have devoted their entire lives to learning what the rabbi does and doing what the rabbi does. So they're trying to keep up. So I want you to imagine that as they're walking this hot, dusty, dirty road, everything the rabbi steps in with the disciples behind is caked all over the front of the disciples. And there was a blessing in the first century that said, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. And everybody knew what it meant to be covered in the dust of their rabbi. So how's that for an introduction to Scripture? So I want you to keep all of that kind of in the background as we kind of reimagine Jesus. So rabbis in this particular time, when they would kind of spread their yoke, spread their teaching, they generally were about 30 years old. We're told Jesus was 30 years old when he was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And he encountered Peter and Andrew. Matthew 4:18 says, as Jesus walked by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net out into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, come, follow me, and I will make you fisher of people. Immediately, at once, they dropped their nets, and they followed him. I'm going to stop there. Come, follow me. They were fishermen, right? Jesus said, come, follow me. So if they were fishermen, what that means is that they were working in the family business, as it says later on, the sons of Zebedee. They were working in the family business, right? And if Jesus said, come, follow me, what that means is they weren't following another rabbi. If they weren't following another rabbi, what that means, they didn't make the cut. They weren't good enough. They didn't have what it takes. And Jesus said, come, follow me. I've always been bothered by that one verse. At once they dropped their nets and followed. At once. They didn't say, where are we going? Where are we going to stay? Who's coming with us? Will there be snacks? That's what I would have asked. It said, at once they followed him. But if we understand it in its context, it makes sense, because rabbis were the most honest, the most revered, the most respected. They were the best of the best of the best of the best. And the disciples of the rabbi were the best of the best of the rest. So here you have these two guys who didn't make the cut. They weren't enough. They didn't have what it takes. And Jesus comes, the rabbi comes along the shore of the Sea of Galilee and says, come, follow me. So what it's really saying is, you can do what I do. You can be like me. What he's really saying to them is, you have what it takes. I believe in you. So it's no wonder they dropped their nets and they followed him. Now, how old were they? They're probably 15, 16, 20 years old. They weren't old men. They were young men. They weren't somebody. They were anybody. More than likely, most people saw them as absolutely nobody. Notice, Jesus didn't say, all right, I have a theological exam I want to give you, just to kind of evaluate you, make sure that you cut the mustard. Jesus didn't say, okay, I want to make sure you believe these six things about me. He didn't say, do you prefer the guitar or the drums or the organ in worship? He didn't say, you know, take a shower. Wash that fish smell off you. He said, come, follow me. Jesus did not test to see how much faith they had in him. He showed them how much faith he had in them. And these nobodies changed the course of history. We spend so much time arguing about, do we believe?